each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning into The Winds of Change on a Wednesday. That means you're with Father Tom Coyes. That means it's Brain Wrinkling Wednesday. Brain wrinkling, and it might be a little heart wrinkling. You know, there are the aspects of the brain and aspects of the heart. Sometimes they're in harmony, sometimes they're not, right? I think we've probably all had that kind of sense. And the reason I start off with that is because there's a reason I'm remembering. I want to play a scene from the great movie A Man for All Seasons. It's a great story about a great saint that influenced, that changed history in so many ways. And to appreciate what St. Thomas More was about, what he believed, what he was standing for, what was at stake, is truly important for our day and age today. Let me back up a little bit, and the reason I want to play a certain scene, it's a scene that I don't think I've played before in the context of hardly anything. I don't remember. There's so many, many good scenes, so much great dialogue. Remember that movie, A Man for All Seasons, it won great awards in its day back in the 60s. There's no way there'd be so many mountains that would have to be climbed in order just to get it in any theaters. It's strange how it does help us see how things have shifted in our society. The scene I want to play for you, and the reason why I'll tell you why I'm thinking of it, is the scene in the jail when Thomas More is locked up in the Tower of London. He knows that his old friend, King Henry VIII, is pretty darn mad at him because his old friend, King Henry VIII, already declared himself head of a new church, the Church of England, especially and primarily to give himself his own annulment, as it were, so that he could marry again, divorce Catherine of Aragon, that sweet, intelligent, very good woman who shared a lot of years with the old Henry VIII. Things were going pretty well until his eyes were distracted and he got tired of Catherine of Aragon. So anyways, he's locked up in the Tower of London, and he won't sign the oath of supremacy that the king is the supreme head of the church. And you'll see, he's gonna try to convince his family what in some ways what he's standing for, though he even doesn't share everything in his mind with his family, because he knows that if his wife, his daughter, son-in-law, hear him say something that he shouldn't be heard saying, and they grab his wife or daughter or son-in-law and torture them to say, did you hear him say anything? Did he say something while you were there? This was in the days before they would have been able to plant a electronic listening device in his cell. Didn't even have electricity yet, so there wouldn't have been electronic listening devices. But certainly if this happened today, there'd probably be a recording device to catch every word he says, so that if he says something treasonous, they can then execute him, right? You know, probably most of us know the basic story. We should. We really should. But there's an aspect of this little jail scene with his daughter Meg that I want to play for you. First, I'll play it. I might play it twice. It's so powerful in our show here today. It's from a play version of the movie. So it's not the characters you might remember from the movies if you saw the movie. Paul Scofield as Thomas More. So here they are in a jail, and the family is let into the jail to try to convince Thomas More to sign the oath of supremacy and get out, because the king, even though he wants Thomas More to sign the oath, he doesn't want to take the strategy of put him on the rack and torture him until he talks. Certainly, this is the time in the history of the world and the time of the history of England where, when you read about the saints, you're going to hear the phrase hanged, drawn, and quartered a lot. It seemed like that was, I don't know if it was invented there in this Reformation time, but it sure got popular in that time. So the king doesn't want to use torture to his old friend Thomas More, who used to be his, shall we say, Supreme Court justice, the head of the Supreme Court, as it were, but now is stripped of his office, canceled, as we say today, sad to say. So Meg. Meg is his intelligent daughter. When you know the story and you know the characters, his wife isn't very well educated. As a matter of fact, after he is relieved of his post, he asks, "Hey, do you want me to teach you to read?" And she goes, "No. Why would I want to read?" Anyways, his daughter loved reading, loved education, spoke Latin very well. There's that wonderful scene when she's starting to talk Latin to King Henry VIII, and Thomas More has to put her down and say, "Don't talk too much with the king. You know, he's not here to talk to you. He's here on business." Something like that. And the business was to get Thomas More to talk to the Pope to get an annulment for him again. So, you know, that just that little aspect of the story needs a little bit of background too. You could say, well, why didn't the Pope just give him an annulment? You know, maybe. The problem is he did already. He didn't want to do it again. It was a real effort on the part of the powers that be to make peace between England, Spain, and France. England, Spain, and France were the key players back in that 16th century. Italy was there, but not so much, because Italy wasn't a nation. It was the Papal States, and so the Pope was there. Germany was all still split up, not really a nation unto itself. So the marriage between Henry VIII and Catherine of Aragon was a very important aspect of keeping peace between nations that would want to go to war. This was the time of the sinking of the Spanish Armada. Do you remember that thing from history? That was a little bit after this, after King Henry declares himself, he starts a new church, he deposes his wife, who was from Spain, and the Spaniards are a little upset, and the Spaniards had a great, great navy. Remember Christopher Columbus and all that good stuff? This was a little bit after that. And so the Spanish king, who happened to also be the emperor of the Holy Roman Empire, so the emperor of the Holy Roman Empire, which did encompass most of Europe at the time, they were involved in fighting a lot of these new religious wars with this new startup movement called Protestantism. And bless their heart, Spain was trying to hold on to Catholicism. Didn't want to go with that. They see now another country going along the Protestant way. So they thought the best interest to go either go rescue Catherine of Aragon, some of her other family that were in prison. They were just going to go over there and let's go get them. Let's round up the posse.
And, here we go again. Batman.
okay, in the midst of this important historical retelling, this narrative, I have to share with you a recent Far Side cartoon that I saw. I have one of those Far Side cartoons for every day, you know. This rounding up a posse. There's a scene. I'll try to paint the scene for you. There's a sheriff standing on his front door there, and there's a cowboy, and he's standing in front of a pile of horses and other cowboys. They're tumbled over each other, horse legs sticking in the air, guns going this way and that way. And the sheriff says to the guy,
George,
now
you just wrinkled my brain.
You just threw this together. A posse is something you're supposed to organize. Did you just throw this posse together? A posse is something you're supposed to organize. Okay, anyways. So the Spanish Armada was organized, and it was formidable, but it was to the great surprise of the Spanish Navy that England also had a great navy, not as big, but they...
Holy Long John Silver!
That would be another general or admiral. Anyways, so the English army sunk the Spanish Armada when they were going to England to try to settle accounts and slap England back into the true faith. Of course, it didn't work, sad to say. And, you know, the rest of the story, things kept getting worse and worse. So I could see some even Catholic theologians. I think I remember my good friend, Bishop Bob Barron, I think he said in one talk that he should have just given him the annulment. That would have saved a whole lot. It might have saved something for a while, but that spirit was growing, and the spirit of let's do sacraments our own way. The sacramentality of marriage was front and center in the Protestant Reformation, right? And so, it's hard to Monday morning quarterback, right? Maybe the Pope could have given him an annulment. Maybe things would have gone differently, but he didn't, and it didn't go differently. The way it happened. So we read history and we often say, what if? And it's not a bad question to ask, but so we might plan for the future, as it were. And in some ways, it did hold the Catholic faith together, as Protestant churches were not only breaking away from Catholicism, but every new Protestant church was soon divided and had to break away from its parent church. So, all goodness. Let's see. Nick, maybe we could take our first break here. It seems like we're at the quarter hour already. My introduction has gone long, but we'll come back with this important scene. I'm going to relate it to a little bit more going on in our church, in our lives today, that I really think is important for all of us to contemplate. Okay, I'm Father Tom Coyes. On the winds of change on AM 750.
Laugh, you make me laugh, you make me laugh, you make me laugh, 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 you make me laugh.
Well, that's the whole point.
You've got to be joking.
No, it's about laughing and joking and having a great time. Join us for a night of laughter at St. Stan's Back to School Comedy Show, Saturday, October 7th. Door opens at 6 p.m., showtime 7 p.m. Admission is just $30 per person with a cash bar, music, and you must be 21 or over.
Are you serious?
Well, of course. The St. Stan's Back to School Comedy Show features the comedy of Jody Baez, Jeannie Dogan, and Alicia Molina. St. Stan's is located at 1255 North Noble. That's two blocks north of Division. On Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. A St. Stan's Back to School Comedy Show, Saturday, October 7th.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, and you are listening to the Winds of Change.
Winds of Change has an immediate part-time opening for producer board operator. The duties include running the Winds of Change program, assembling the best of programs, working with a host radio station and program hosts, writing the day's program summary for web posting, plus uploading a copy of the day's program to our web-based archive. Familiarity with Adobe Audition is desirable. Also have knowledge of the teachings of the Catholic faith. The Winds of Change studio is located at 1351 West Evergreen Avenue, Chicago, at the historic St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish. Work hours are Monday through Friday from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Interested parties may submit resumes to adcmedia@hotmail.com. adcmedia@hotmail.com.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. I was in the middle of telling part of the story of The Man for All Seasons, a story and a movie we should all have high on our priority lists anyways. And I want to share a scene from that. But speaking of which, because the story of A Man for All Seasons is a story of the birth of the Anglican Church, I got to throw in a little plug of my own after those wonderful commercials there. There's a convert to Catholicism from Anglicanism by the name of Father Longenecker. Father Longenecker is a great podcaster. He's written a lot of wonderful books. He's going to be at St. James of the Sag on the southwest side of the world here of Chicagoland, St. James of the Sag in Lamont, Illinois. We're going to do a Saturday morning of recollection on Saturday, October 20th. So that's a little bit of ways, but we'll have more information on that. Just check out our website, Historic St. James. Okay, so in order to say that this scene hit me in a very powerful way recently, and I think I want to relate it to something that many of us Catholics are experiencing and a difficulty that we face regarding holding to our Catholic positions in a world that's spinning morally out of control, shall we say. Anyways, okay, so here's Meg trying to convince her father, Thomas Moore, in the jail to sign the oath, and It just goes like this. Let's see.
Those other things.
Oh. And this.
Oh.
He's handing him a bottle of wine.
Is it good, Sir Roger?
I don't know, sir.
Well?
Sir, come out. Swear to the act. Take the oath and come out.
Is this why they've let you visit me?
Yes. It makes under oath to persuade you.
Oh, that was silly, Meg. How did you come to do that?
I wanted to.
You want me to swear to the act of succession?
God more regards the thoughts of the heart than the words of the mouth. Or so you've always told me.
Yes?
Then say the words of the oath, and in your heart think otherwise.
Well, what is an oath, then, but words we say to God?
That's very neat.
You mean it isn't true?
No, it's true.
Then it's a poor argument to call it neat, Meg. Meg, when a man takes an oath, he's holding his own self in his own hands, like water. And if he opens his fingers then, well, he needn't hope to find himself again. Some men aren't capable of this. But I'd be loath to think your father one of them.
In any state that was half good, you'd be raised up high, not here for what you've done already. It's not your fault the state's three quarters bad. Then, if you elect to suffer for it, you elect yourself a hero.
Oh, that's very neat, Meg. But look now, if we lived in a state where virtue was profitable, common sense would make us good, and greed would make us saintly. And we'd live like animals or angels in that happy land that needs no heroes. But since, in fact, we see that avarice, anger, envy, sloth, lust, and stupidity commonly profit far beyond humility, chastity, justice, fortitude, and thought, and we have to choose to be human at all, well, then perhaps we must stand fast a little, even at the risk of being heroes.
But in reason, haven't you done as much as God can reasonably want?
Well, finally, it isn't a matter of reason. Finally, it's a matter of love.
You're content, then, to be shut up here with the mice and the rats when you might be home with us?
Content? If they'd open a crack that wide, I'd be through it. Well, has Eve run out of apples?
Not yet told you what the house is like without you.
Don't
what
Meg.
We do in Meg, the evenings now, you're not there.
Meg,
we sit in the dark
Meg,
because we've no candles
Meg.
And we've no talk because we're worrying about what they're doing to you in here.
The king is more merciful than you. He doesn't use the rack.
2 minutes to go, sir. I thought you'd like to know.
2 minutes?
I'm 7 o'clock, sir. I'm sorry. 2 minutes.
Taylor! Will, go to him. Keep him occupied.
How, sir?
Anyhow, have you got any money?
Yes.
No. Don't bribe him. Make him play for it. He's got a pair of dice. And talk to him. You understand? Oh, here. Take this. And mind you share it, Will. Do it properly. Now you must leave the country. All of you must leave the country.
And leave you here?
It doesn't matter, Meg. They won't let you see me again. You must go on the same day, but different boats. Different boats from different ports.
After the trial, then?
There'll be no trial. They have no case. Do this for me. I beseech you.
Yes.
Alice, I command you.
Right.
Oh, I know who packed this.
I packed it?
Yes. Yes, you still make a superlative custard, Alice.
Do I?
And, well, that's a nice dress you have on.
It's my cooking dress.
Well, it's very nice anyway. Nice color.
My God, you think very little of me. I...
Remember that scene? That's the reason I share with you.
Wow.
Is because
you just wrinkle my brain, man.
There are issues that us Catholics are standing for, that are dividing families, as it were. We're trying to hold onto a particular part of our dogma, part of our rock solid faith, especially those things that have to do with marriage, the sanctity and sacredness of marriage. That it just hit me that many times the arguments fall flat. I've heard so many, even politicians or people in higher positions of authority, that have spoken for marriage between a man and a woman, that want that to stand, but then when they find it in their own family, they will say, well, I have to give an exception because I love my children, or whoever it might be. And the arguments that defend the right, the arguments that promote marriage between a man and a woman, which are solid, are stronger than the arguments for gay marriage, we'll say, and but you will abandon the stronger intellectual arguments, not because of a greater intellectual argument or someone has convinced you to go, shall we say, in opposition to the Catholic position, but because there's your heart dictates you. That's where, did you notice the first two arguments that Meg uses with her father to swear the oath of supremacy, and make no mistake about the oath of supremacy. The oath of supremacy was not the key issue. It was the sacredness of marriage and the king's annulment. Some Catholic theologians were even proposing to the Pope to say, okay, well, the king could be the head of the church in England, as long as the king of England, being the head of the church, the head of the Catholic Church in England, as long as he realized he was not creating a new church, but that kind of like what we have today with the USCCB, a national conference of bishops, is and has certain authority over the nation it lives in, but the National Association of Bishops, or let us say if there was one bishop, or if there was a nation that had a Catholic if our United States was a nation that was content to call itself a Catholic nation, and that the president had kind of in his inauguration oath something like what the emperor back in Europe had, namely that the emperor, when he took his oath, or kings like the king of France, the king of Spain, and even king of England before, and many of the provinces and the lesser principalities, especially the emperor, they called it, it was the Holy Roman Emperor, because he, in his oath, he said he had to swear to defend the Catholic faith if it's attacked. Since he was the one who had the best army, he was called upon to use the army. As a matter of fact, when there was a difficulty for the Pope and the Emperor, just a little bit before this time of Thomas More, when the Pope was asking the Holy Roman Emperor to help with a war going on because there were Spaniards coming into northern Italy, even though it wasn't Italy at the time, and they were threatening Naples was one of the big cities up there, of course, and
wow,
that means take over.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
So the Pope says, "Hey, Holy Roman Emperor, you're sworn to help me." Unfortunately, the emperor was from Spain, and he had a hard time accepting the charge. So, anyways, the reason I bring that up is because there were some Catholic voices that were saying, okay, let the King of England declare himself to be the head of the Church of England. If he's going to be a good Catholic king, then maybe he could have that power, as long as he abides by, you know, if there's a conflict with the Pope, then the Pope gets the final word. You know what it reminds me a little bit of, friends? This is strange. It reminds me a little bit of what Opus Dei is in their community. If you know some Opus Dei people, it's a wonderful organization, very strong Catholic organization. And oftentimes a lay person, we call them supernumeraries, will have charge over the priests.
We're on a mission from God.
A lay leader will tell the priest what his assignment is and what he needs to do, and sometimes the priest has to ask permission. So there's a non-cleric who's kind of in charge of clerics. So, and of course, it gets a little more complicated because of the necessity of spiritual direction on the part of all the lay people, etc. But the idea of King Henry VIII being the head of the Church of England may have, shall we say, worked if that king had a vow to promote Catholicism. And that definition of Catholicism was overseen by the Pope, right? So you could have had a lay person as the head of the Church of England. You could have had a lay person as the head of the Church of France. And almost all the kings of France wanted that so much, and they often declared it. And the Pope sometimes let them think it. But when push comes to shove, in other words, the Pope was going to let the Catholics in France do as much as they want, as long as it didn't step over a certain line in one way or another. This is where we got to draw the line. Actually, this is a good thing to meditate on as we're heading into October with this synod on synodality coming. The sense of synod, every national church having its own synod of bishops, which is a good thing, and there have been lots of synods throughout history. Bishops have gathered and dealt with issues that only really affect or change something within that nation. But a lot of times the issues are international, not just national. Therefore, to say that each nation will have its own synod and make up its own policies is going back to this idea that almost slipped into our history, that almost won the day, that some Catholic theologians were saying should have happened, would have been better if it happened. That is, let Henry, a Catholic king, be head of the church. But of course, like that wonderful diatribe, Thomas More, saying that greed and envy enter into the picture. You can't just wish those things away. I love that. The two arguments that Meg uses, the first one being that if you swear to the oath, but inside you deny it. I'm sure all of us, when we were kids, if you make a promise, I don't know if they still do this today.
Whoa.
They promise you could cross your fingers.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
That sort of annulled it. I promise I will give your bicycle back by 3 o'clock today. Then you don't give it back. I had my fingers crossed. That was, it's kind of the children's way of not keeping a true oath. And so to say that you're going to promote the true Catholicism as a Catholic king or as a national association of bishops. Some things will be fine, but there are lines that will inevitably be crossed. If the Synod on Synodality tries to recreate that, we will, in a sense, be following the example of the Eastern Orthodox churches, not the ones in union with Rome, but the ones that are separated from Rome. They're very nationalistic in a lot of different ways, and that would be that'd be losing something of great importance that most of us believe was started by the Lord Jesus himself. Do you get it? So, and then Meg's second argument: if you're living in a state that's half good and half bad, you'd be raised high for all the good you've done already. But we're living in a country, we're living in a state that's three quarters bad. So if you're going to try to fight the bad state, you're going to elect yourself to be a hero. And that's when Thomas says, well, maybe we, just following the crowd made you a saint, then greed and avarice would make you saintly. And that great line, perhaps sometimes we have to stand fast a little, even at the risk of being hero. That's a powerful line. Okay, I think we're late for our second break, aren't we? So I'm going to come back and really shift and let you know what's behind the reason why I'm sharing this special scene with you and all this important history, because it's something called Obergefell. Do you know what that is? I got to clue you in once again. Okay, I'm Father Tom Coyes, and you're listening to the Winds of Change. We are AM 750 WNDZ.
Laugh, you make me laugh, you make me laugh. You make me laugh, 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 laugh. You make me laugh.
Well, that's the whole point.
You've got to be joking.
No, it's about laughing and joking and having a great time. Join us for a night of laughter at St. Stan's Back to School Comedy Show, Saturday, October 7th. Door opens at 6 p.m., showtime 7 p.m. Admission is just $30 per person with a cash bar, music, and you must be 21 or over.
Are you serious?
Well, of course. The St. Stan's Back to School Comedy Show features the comedy of Jody Baez, Jeannie Dogan, and Alicia Molina. St. Stan's is located at 1255 North Noble. That's two blocks north of Division. On Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. A St. Stan's Back to School Comedy Show, Saturday, October 7th.
We are the students of St. Stan's La Costa Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. Visit ststanschicago.org to find out how.
And you're listening to the Winds of Change.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic, social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststandschicago.org. ststandschicago.org.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Time for some brain wrinkling. The whole reason I shared that little scene from the prison scene of A Man for All Seasons where Meg tries to convince her father to go against his conscience. She gives reasons, but he finds the reasons are not really sound. And she starts crying and he says, at last, it's not a matter of reason. It's a matter of love.
No!
Or I think it's in the movie she says, or he says, it's a matter of the heart, but heart or love. It's the dilemma of when our heart doesn't understand the reasons. Reasons are solid from many people, but there's something in the heart that pushes you to say, I can't follow that reasoning.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
Yeah, that's what. And many arguments, religious arguments, especially these days, are not argued rationally. They're argued emotionally because we have a certain sense. This same-sex marriage issue is very loaded with sentiment, emotions. People that say such a thing, well, so-and-so is attracted, a girl is more attracted to females than to men. You ask why. You wonder about that, and you could easily say, "Oh, well, yeah, women are attractive. Men can say women are attractive, and so, well, maybe this woman or that woman is attractive to that woman, and a man might be attracted to a man. I really like that guy, and there may be some of these impulses to do certain acts." But your will your mind overrides your will, and you say, no, that's not what is proper, or that's, I'm not going to follow that instinct, that inclination. It's the big question of concupiscence, which is always circling around our world and our lives, right? Okay, so, oh dear, I'm going to, again, I promise one of these days to have a whole series on Obergefell. I think it's very key for us Catholics and all Americans, especially those who see a problem with the radical change in the nature of marriage. So it's important to try. I want to read large segments of the winning Supreme Court opinion. Obviously, you know, when a Supreme Court works on a decision, one side wins, one side loses. And the side that wins writes the majority opinion. And the justices that didn't win, they still get to write an opinion. They write what is called the minority opinion. So it's quite important for us to appreciate what the majority opinion is, especially because it's written by a Catholic. We got to read large swatches of it and find out, again, intellectually, we have to keep our emotions aside, but to see why it's wrong thinking. Why it's wrong thinking. Because so many don't think it's wrong. So many think the Supreme Court got it exactly right, even among many of us Catholics. Okay. So here's how, after going through a little bit of introductory sentences. Obergefell, by the way, was the name of a guy from Ohio. Was it Robert Edward? I can't remember. Let's see if I could find it here real quick. Anyways, he went to the Secretary of State, wanted to get a marriage license so that he could marry his boyfriend. And the Secretary of State says, I can't do that. We only give licenses for men and women. And he says, well, you have to give it to me. And of course, he sued the state of Ohio, and it goes up to the Supreme Court, and that's where we got. So wait a minute. My goodness, this time is going by way too fast. Before I start reading, let's take our third break, okay? I'm sure we want to get all the news that comes from the wonderful station, Winds of Change. So let's take our final break and at least start some meditation. We need to digest it, and I'm only going to be able to take one paragraph a show. This will take about 52 more shows then. Anyways, okay. I'm Father Tom Coyce. You're listening to The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Winds of Change has an immediate part-time opening for producer board operator. The duties include running the Winds of Change program, assembling the best of programs, working with a host radio station and program hosts, writing the day's program summary for web posting, plus uploading a copy of the day's program to our web-based archive. Familiarity with Adobe Audition is desirable. Also have knowledge of the teachings of the Catholic faith. The Winds of Change studio is located at 1351 West Evergreen Avenue, Chicago, at the historic St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish. Work hours are Monday through Friday from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Interested parties may submit resumes to adcmedia@hotmail.com. adcmedia@hotmail.com.
I'm Father Tom Coyce, and you are listening to The Winds of Change.
Here is an update on the Fulton Sheen petition.
We Catholics stand just inches from the goal line to have the saint we desperately need now, Venerable Fulton Sheen, publicly declared blessed. Yet new obstacles keep arising to delay this from happening. The Diocese of Peoria is now requiring the unanimous support of the U.S. bishops behind the beatification of Fulton Sheen before a new date is set for the ceremonial mass. This has never been necessary in the Church's history. The Fulton Sheen Movement's petition drive to set a new date soon for Sheen's Beatification Mass now has 10,000 Catholics from around the world clamoring for this. We need this voice magnified by hundreds of thousands more Catholics. And you can help us do that. Take action. Go to FultonSheenMovement.com and sign the petition and share it everywhere, because everyone agrees we need Blessed Fulton Sheen now more than ever.
Bye now, and God love you.
Hey, welcome back. I really want to encourage you to go to that website for Fulton Sheen. He touched, he moved, he converted so many people, and he had a strong sense of the moral side of faith, the strong sense of the scripture and the spiritual side, the mystical side of faith, and anyways, go to the website and sign. We need to unpause the cause so that we can call him Saint Fulton Sheen, right? Okay, so here's how, again, majority opinion written by a Catholic, and it sounds very, very, very similar to many people's thoughts. Remember, laws teach. You don't only learn stuff in school, but you learn about either right and wrong or the way government goes by decisions that are made through the law. And sometimes we get it wrong. Many times that we need a respect for law. As a matter of fact, Abraham Lincoln famously said that respect for the law is the religion of America. And his great respect for the law almost made him give up on the issue of slavery. But it gnawed at him. He saw with his human experience that there was something wrong with people enslaving others. And he had to change his attitude about the law. Great respect for the law, but when the law or the Constitution doesn't spell out something specifically, then gotta spell it out. And that, of course, is what some of the amendments are for. As a matter of fact, the amendments from the Civil War play prominently in the Obergefell decision. The full case is Obergefell versus Hodges. Hodges was the person who was the Secretary of State who didn't want to write him the marriage license. So, here's how the majority opinion starts. The history of marriage as a union between two persons of opposite sex marks the beginning of this case, or these cases, as more than one person talking about or speaking for. To the respondents, it would demean a timeless institution if marriage were extended to same-sex marriage. And I'll just quickly slip in there to the Catholic position. Catholics would say, or I can't even, a lot of Christians who are not Catholics and a lot of other believing people are those who are atheists would say that. So anyways, so they're just the respondents. But the petitioners, the two gay guys, far from seeking to demean marriage, seek it for themselves because of their respect and need for its privileges and responsibilities, as illustrated by the petitioner's own experiences. So right off the bat, let's stop with that one. He's saying marriage does have privileges, responsibility, and it carries with it a respect.
Wow. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
And so they're starting out by saying, okay, these two guys want that respect, want that privilege, and want those responsibilities. Now, there's major responsibilities that they can't fulfill, namely give society more children, and maintain a sense. This is why I'm going to jump the gun here a bit, but I got to do it because I can't talk about this issue without using that very good, powerful philosophical word, teleology. Teleology, where we carry with us we are responsible for respecting teleology. And of course, if you listen to Winds of Change, you know exactly what teleology is, but let me refresh your memory if you forgot. Teleology is the philosophy, the idea that says things do have a purpose or an end in themselves, not just what we as humans declare them to be. In our own inventions, we, the inventors, can declare a purpose for an invention. But if you didn't invent it and you buy something that I invented and made and you're using it against its purpose or end, then things start to happen. Things like warranties die. I'm sure you've seen so many times. If you're looking at a human product and you're trying to fix it, inevitably somewhere, the people who made it, the people who sold it, they're smart enough to realize that if you're going to try to fix it, you might break it. So if you don't know how to fix it, don't fix it. So that's why warranties always say, if you open the case and you try to fix it yourself, the warranty is no longer valid. You can't send us a broken thing after you tried to fix it and say, okay, you owe me a new one. So that's what teleology is obvious in our humanly manufactured things. But it's also involved in nature with things that we didn't make. And that's like our bodies, a male body and a female body. All you do is have to look at it a little bit and realize here's the meaning of your eyes have a goal, have a purpose, have an end to help you see. So if you're going to do something that will go against the goal or the purpose of your eyes, let us say, poke a stick in someone's eye. Remember that promise or the oath that you would swear as a child, cross my heart and hope to die, stick a needle in my eye. The reason sticking a needle in your eye would be very bad is because you're ruining the teleology of your eye. Your eye is not made to be a pincushion. It is made to be an instrument that makes you see, translates light into your eye socket, into your brain.
Wow.
Pincushion.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Does anybody have a pincushion anymore? We used to always have pincushions, right? If you were a sewer around the sewing machine, you'd have that pincushion there. So anyways, so Obergefell, the majority opinion, is trying to state that they're going to go with the petitioner, the two gay guys petitioning to be married, because they're desirous to have the benefits of marriage. They're not trying to demean marriage, but they want the blessings and the goodness that marriage brings. Now, of course, we've got to stop there and say, yes, you want the good part of it, but they don't want, well, we'll say the bad part of it. And that's not bad for a lot of people, but it for them, for two guys, the bad part would be you gotta hook up with a person of the opposite sex, not the same sex. Well, we don't want to do that. Why? Because I'm not attracted to persons of the other sex. Well, a lot of people aren't attracted to their wives or husbands either, but that doesn't mean you just leave them. or the fact that you're married, that you're attracted to, the attraction doesn't mean necessity. The whole idea of free will means you switch you control your attractions to the objective good that you're trying to achieve. So, oh dear, well, there's the music. Okay, I started Obergefell. I'm going to have to come back to this time and time again because it's so much at the center of so many things happening today. And it's important to see how bad the reasoning and argument is of the majority opinion, okay? I'm Father Tom Coyes. Thank you for listening to The Winds of Change on WNDZ AM 750.
Do we search deep for truth or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now.